You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Fadi Juda. We're going to be talking with him about his work today. Fadi, thanks so much for being with me today.
Well, thank you for having me.
So, Fadi, we're in we're talking from Houston, Texas, and I want to talk a little. We're talking, of course, in a very unusual time, probably at what is not even the peak of the coronavirus, and so perhaps some of what we've talked about will change a little bit. In I wanted to talk to you about your poetry, and I imagine that is what we are talking about. But you're also a doctor, isn't that true?
Yes, I'm currently a hospitalist, trained and certified in internal medicine, and I work on the floors in hospitals and for admitted patients.
Okay, so we're going to, of course, move into writing the poems, but I want to ask you what you're writing, but I feel like we should address that as a poet and a physician who's in hospitals. Is this a particularly difficult time for you? I imagine it might be, in a way, unlike other people are feeling.
I think, I have a different way of responding, perhaps, or resisting a traditional response in the moment. I don't know if it's because of my past experience with Doctors Without Borders many years ago, or because the peak of the corona pandemic has not hit Texas yet, or Houston. So I think that, for some pockets in the country currently, especially New York, things are a bit different for healthcare providers. But I also think that everybody is sort of exhausted and in high stress because life is not conducting itself in a normal, usual pattern. And sort of we're quite a country of voice, I think, or voices. We're quite committed to voice, almost as a product also, as a thing that we each produce and reproduce and, circulate. I don't know if I am dealing with any stress more than anyone else is, in a sense. And of course there is this desire to sort of, speak of the healthcare as front line and this kind of war language, something that we've, as a culture, we've addressed before, this problematic of, illness and metaphor, as Susan Sontag had previously written, where, the language is sometimes romanticizes battle.
And the fight with cancer type of thing, or the fight against.
Right, and right. Blasting something with antibiotics and, et cetera. And also the idea that also brings us closer to accepting the heroic, because we find ourselves in a moment where we need to reignite our belief in the hero. And so we all need a hero. I forget which song that was. We need
David
a hero.
David Bowie, maybe? We can
no.
Be heroes?
Well, there is David Bowie, but I don't know if it's a...
Oh, but right, Need a Hero. I Need a Hero maybe is another song, right?
In the middle of the night or something. I don't know if it's a... Is that a Pat Benatar song or... I can't remember. Or is that the Total Eclipse of the Heart? I can't remember. Anyway.
I think Total Eclipse of the Heart might be it. That sounds right, but that's right. Interesting. We need a hero.
I don't think that there's anything wrong with that, but I'm not entirely sure, you know, on this whole thing, like why do we forget the janitors, for example, who are in the hospitals, or nurse assistants, let alone nurses, or, you know, clerks. And it's kind of an interesting problematic of assigning heroism in a particular way, and it gets complicated. And again, it's not to dismiss the times we're in, and they're complicated times, and I think they're estranging to everyone.
I think that's very powerful, what you're saying, and it seems to come from, you know, in my mind, the way a writer or poet would think about it, and also it's just absolutely the fact, but that, right, we think of doctors on the front lines, these heroes, and there are all these other people that you could say are supporting doctors, hospitals, who are heroes just as much. I mean, making the idea of a hero, you know, not as appropriate, really, but so true. All these, and I'm so glad you said that, all these kind of voices that aren't heard, that are doing as much or more than doctors in this regard, or whoever we, you know, say is the hero that we're looking for now.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a whole lot going on here with the national ethos and, you know, and how it translates into a sort of political language. And but it doesn't, again, dismiss the tragedy that afflicts many people who grieve their lost ones, or also lose their well-being and livelihood, obviously because of the impending economic doom, so to speak. So it's hard for me to just see anything other than just being part of a collective, you know, and ultimately, as a physician, I'm pretty sure that I'm far more privileged than most people in the country. So there is that. And then, of course, there is, you know, people want to say, well, you have a higher risk of falling ill or seriously ill from the disease and so forth. And, you know, I guess that may be true in some cohorts or certain circumstances of providing care, that, you know, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, that's so important to say, because I'm not sure either. Let's now talk about, you know, I mean, given that, which is where we are right now, on this day, April 1st of 2020, let's talk about your books. I believe A Light was the last one, but I could be wrong, of five books that you've written. No?
No.
What is the most recent book? What are you working on now?
There have been two books since A Light. There's been one called Text 2 and another one called Footnotes in the Order of Disappearance, which came out in 2018. And next year I should have a book called Tethered to Stars. The last book, and this one should be with the Milkweed editions.
And is that the one you're working on now, Tethered to Stars? Is that what you said?
Tethered to Stars, yeah.
Right. So we can begin with that a little bit if you want. It's a beautiful title, Tethered to Stars. Just a gorgeous three words. Can you tell me a little bit about that and how it departs from other previous work of yours?
I think that I wanted to, I guess I alluded to it at the beginning, I wanted to sort of investigate the sort of preoccupation we have culturally with voice, you know, with subjectivity. Each one of us has a story to tell, and it has to be very specific, and it applies into or slots into certain narratives that are categorized culturally, whether you're a veteran, and so you're talking about your experience, your gender issues, race issues, ethnic issues, religious issues, domestic difficulties, grief, et cetera, and so the voice has become compartmentalized, I think I wanted to experiment with what happens if the voice does not lose its specificity, but at the same time is also so polyphonic that it is anti-voice, sort of like returning to a choir without necessarily preaching, so to speak. And so I decided to use the language of both astrology and astronomy to approximate, to see what it provides for me. So the poems are really, many of them are titled, you know, after the zodiacs, sort of like the horoscopes, and other astronomical phenomena, like blue shift or black hole or white dwarf, you know, event horizon. These things sort of like, that have been popularized in the way that we introduce science to the general population, and science fiction and all these documentaries, et cetera. So, of course, I'm far from being anything worthwhile in astrophysics. You know, I don't know much about astrophysics or that kind of elevated math, but I just wanted a vehicle, if you will, to kind of open up the language. I think every writer aspires to change their own language along the voyage, so to speak. Otherwise, we just get really stuck in a rut of repeating ourselves and sort of like burying yourself alive, even if one has quote unquote commercial success.
Well, that's so interesting. That's so interesting, you know, and quite complex, this idea of getting away from voices. And if I'm understanding you correctly, right, we're in this age where there's this kind of multiplicity of voices, you know, of all kinds, of gender, of political, of all kinds, and something like astrology, or even the title, at least this is the lines that I'm drawing together, tethered to the stars, is points to something a little more universal, right? When we read, I didn't grow up with astrology, but my wife's from Spain, and she talks about astrology like it's, you know, like it's talking about the color of hair people have, right? But it's strangely universal, right? We're not talking about a culture, really, or in many cases even a gender with kind of, I guess it's European based astrology, but it kind of is a chorus of voices, or without being a chorus of voices. I mean, it's such a kind of provocative idea that you're proposing. So I'm trying to just get a handle on that. And it seems that the structure that you've set up in the book and the title, is it to kind of create, and just correct me if I'm really just far afield here, a kind of area where all our voices aren't one, but are seen the same way, almost genderless and without geographic origin?
No, because I think I was just going to say to that, you know, the obviously we've had problems with the universal, because the universal sometimes has been used as a transcendental self-proclaimed transcendentalism in order to sort of shut others up. Especially in Western colonial history, whenever we wanted the colonized were not specific enough, and whenever we wanted, we could rise to the magnanimity of the universal. So I think that the ease of using the universal also comes with nationalist tendencies that I also resist. I'm not eliminating specificities. But I am also trying to create a discomfort where, or a dis-ease with feeling that our universality, as you call it, or whatever is cosmic about us, is something that can be easily identified. I mean, obviously, what is cosmic or universal about us is that we all breathe oxygen to live and drink water and, you know, have the same anatomies and so forth. So some of that is what binds us. But speech is a problem. You know, human language, despite maybe being anatomically or molecularly similar, you know, the way the brain lights up and whatnot, the way consciousness is a problem. And so I wanted to kind of present what it means also to sort of encounter these difficulties without giving specificity to the voice. It's not about, it is about me speaking as a, you know, an Arab or an Arab American or a bilingual, but it also is not. I am also a physician. I am also, and again, it's not just about astrology. It is also about astronomy. So the idea of the, you know, the elements, the elemental, and the, you know, the idea of a history of mankind or humankind that that has long ago intuited without direct witness or, you know, application of the scientific method that we are made of dust. And the dust comes from the stars, and the, you know, and the, we are made of light. These kind of obsessive searches we have for origin. It's, I think it's another thing. Since I mentioned the word origin, I think there's kind of a fixation we have with originality also, which is problematic for voice. So there's something about using this vehicle in conversing with the stars, in a sense, which is a very old human thing, that diffuses this fixation we have with originality.
I like that. I like that. That's very, very well put. I want to ask you one more question before the last, which is, you know, often when I'm talking to poets, they read, and today we decided not to read HeroQuest. And, you know, I've heard so many things from different poets in relation to what they think about reading, from, you know, poetry slams to just reading to not reading at all. I'm of course not asking you to read, but I'm asking you what you think about you personally reading your poems and the importance of that, or why it's not important.
I enjoy reading poems, you know, out loud to myself or to listeners, you know, whether it's one person or several people, and it's just you know, I'm very clear in my mind about it. It's a kind of a childhood joy, really. You know, I enjoy the song that happens in the brain or in the mind when I read poetry, and I like that feeling. I like that return or preservation of that. Sort of childhood moment. So it's a way for me to preserve childhood. The writing, the composition, the engagement with the world is definitely a loss or a mutability of innocence, for sure. But the reading is a return to childhood. So the text is not about, you know, there's a difference, of course, here, what I'm trying to say, between childhood and childishness, you know.
Yes.
And so I like reading. I you know, but sometimes I don't get the opportunity to sort of leave something else on record other than sort of the reading of a text in a way of speaking. So a conversation sometimes is a different way. It doesn't, you know, because a conversation, it doesn't make, like, we tend to feel that the text concretizes, you know, the conversation when a poet or an author, a writer is speaking or conversing on the radio. But maybe that's all for just an illusion.
Well, thank you for that. That was kind of wonderful to hear. Perhaps it is all an illusion. And let me ask you what you're reading now. What are you reading at the moment?
I actually just completed a book in Arabic on the life of Ibn Arabi, who is a famous 12th century mystic philosopher, Sufi philosopher, who's quite influential in sort of the history of Arabic and Islamic culture. And it's interesting because the original book was written in French, the gold standard on his biography by a French woman, Claude Adas, but when it was translated into Arabic, because the sources are in Arabic, the translator just populated the whole book with amazing footnotes, because sometimes, you know, because he doesn't have to translate the original text, whereas the French author would sometimes just footnote the sources, because it's a scholarly book, but you'd have to go look into those sources. And so because it is Arabic, and all the sources are in Arabic, and so the translator made the original book in French, this massive book in Arabic, because it included a lot of the original footnotes or references or bibliography with these, you know, large quotations and commentary as well. So it's quite a rich read. And of course, Sufis are ultimately, like I always like to call them, like the original, of course they're not the original, but language poets, in the sense that they... Their brilliance in diving into language, whether it's the language of the Quran or poetry or whatnot, allowed them to open up domains for thinking and being, and also anti-establishment ways of thinking and being. And they often got into, you know, political trouble and persecution and whatnot. And yet they, I think, over the centuries have captivated the spirit of the average person in the Middle East more so than is recognizable. It's just a fascinating book to read. I don't know if it's translated in English or not. I think the name of it in English is something about red sulfur, if it is, because, you know, red sulfur was this... non-existent sort of alchemist compound that supposedly transforms silver into gold. So I think it's something about the search of red sulfur or something. But anyway, that's the book I just finished.
Sounds fascinating, yeah. And that relates to some of the translation you're doing, you're saying, as well?
No.
I misunderstood that. Yeah, wasn't sure if there was something you were also translating in that, because you also translate, correct?
I do. Yeah. I'm finishing up a brief selected poems for a Palestinian poet, a woman who lives in Jerusalem. Her name is Maya Abul Hayat, and she is also like a children's author and also a novelist. Another memoir by another Palestinian who died actually in, I think, 2003 or something. His name is Hussein Barouti, called Blue Light. It's a memoir of his time in Seattle, in fact. It's kind of a well-known book in contemporary Arabic, and so it's nice to translate it since it is based in the U.S., the story itself.
That sounds very interesting. So, Fadi, I want to thank you for your time today, and look forward to the new book coming out, which there are links to here in the interview for those listening. Fadi, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.